touches on it in your life. What we're doing now is talking about it in relationship to your practice as a nurse. How do you manage diabetes in the hospital? How do we manage diabetes? What are the nurses' roles regarding diabetes? What do you do? So most of you have given insulin injections, correct? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's some of the, what are you concerned about with insulin injections? What do you have to worry about? What do you do?
Check their blood sugar.
Check the blood sugar level, yeah. Absolutely. Why? Why do you check the blood sugar level, Gabby? Either hyper or hypo, meaning?
A lot of sugar or not enough.
Right, hyper would be a lot of sugar, hypo. So if they're hypo.
They need sugar. They need like.
Correct.
Or something.
So you're going to give your insulin?
No.
No. Got it? So diabetes is hyperglycemia. Too much sugar in the bloodstream. So what we do with the medications with diabetic patients is constantly level the amount of sugar in the blood and the amount of insulin. And we want them working together at the optimum level. If one or the other is higher, the body is not working efficiently, and we can supplement. Like Gabby said, if it's hyperglycemic, we give insulin to bring it down. If it's hypoglycemic, that would mean that there's not enough sugar. Okay, we give sugar to bring up it up to the level of normal insulin output. There's a little ditty for remembering hypoglycemia. Anybody heard it? Cold and clammy, need some candy? Okay, so if your patient is cold and clammy, they're likely hypoglycemic. At what point do we consider them hypoglycemic clinically? Usually it's, did you see 70? Usually it's 60 that we start getting worried about. 70 certainly is a little low, and I would watch a patient closer to 70. But 60 is when we start what most hospitals have, which are the hypoglycemic protocol. So let's say you take your blood, your patient's blood sugar routinely, and it's 55. You can give them insulin? No, what are you going to give them? Yeah, you're going to refer to the protocol. You may give them an injection of glucose directly into the bloodstream. You may give them something orally. You may, hospitals have a specific written protocol. You always call the MD. Okay. So when you go to give insulin, to take a blood sugar, you have your blood sugar, you go to the MR, what do you see?
There's a scale.
Often there's a scale, not always. But often there's a scale. What does that scale say?
It just kind of gives you the range between like the glucose levels.
So the 100, 100, well, so it's like 90 to 110, it would say give nothing maybe.
Yeah.
Right? And 110 to 125, give 1 unit. And 125 to 135, give 2 units. Of what? In this case, what kind of insulin would we be using on that sliding scale? What kinds of insulins are reflected in the sliding scale? Because as you know from the handout that I hope I gave you, there are all sorts of different kinds of insulins.
The rapid-acting insulin?
Yeah, the rapid-acting, what we call it regular. Yeah, rapid-acting. And this would be most likely given when?
Before meals.
Before meals, yeah, before meals. So if your patient has a blood sugar of, you know, 200, you're going to give maybe 5 units of regular acting insulin. And you're going to give it when? For the meal. An hour before? An hour after? When are you going to give it?
It's supposed to be like
10 seconds. Yeah, right before. Why would you not want to give it an hour before? What's it going to do? What's that insulin going to cause the blood sugar? The blood left the sugar level in the blood to do?
Go down.
Okay, so remember that. The insulin is like a little packet. It eats up the sugar in the blood, causing it to drop. But if we're putting sugar in, then we're gonna then as the person eats, you know, it's gonna bunch up all the sugar, right? And so we keep at this constant level. Okay, now so you've given your insulin injection, 205 units, great, you're all set. And then the cafeteria calls, you're 15 minutes before the trays arrive, due to arrive, you think you're all set, you're moving on, and the cafeteria calls and said, there's been a fire and none of the trays are coming up for at least 2 hours. Now what? You have a problem, don't you?
Well, wouldn't you give them snacks and like some places that
you give them whatever you could to get them through. Mm-hmm. And you just keep monitoring them. Because it's not uncommon that, yeah, you give the insulin, the tray comes, the patient says, oh, I'm not hungry, that's nothing that I ordered. What's going to happen if you just let them not eat? You've given the insulin. Where is the blood sugar going? Down, because the insulin's quickly using up all the sugar that's in the blood. And so if you're not replenishing that sugar with a meal that you prepared for, right, by giving the insulin, you're going to have a drop in blood sugar. That's why when you're writing your meds for insulin, what's the biggest side effect? Hypoglycemia, right? Because if you don't time that right. So I usually wait until I see those trays on the floor, until I smell them before I give them. And I don't know, at Santa Rosa, they've been giving insulin awfully early, and I'm like, whoa, you guys are kind of risking it. You know, and again, when do you take the blood sugar level? Do you take it an hour before? Probably not. I mean, a half hour, you know, fairly close, because that's pretty tight. Right? And granted, you've got 5 patients, and maybe they're all on insulin and are all blood sugar checks, and this is a big pain in the neck, and you're trying to organize everything. But be careful. Now, what is going to cause your patient's blood sugar to go down besides insulin?
Exercise.
Yeah. My patient is just amazing. We lift him from the Hoyer lift to the chair. He tools around in his wheelchair a little bit. We lift him back from the Hoyer lift into his bed, and that is enough to make a difference in his blood sugar. He's used up sugar in his blood just through that simple activity. So don't think it's going to be like you in order to gain, you know, to burn how many calories you've got to run around the track 4 times. It can be it's amazing how quickly exercise, any kind of movement, extra cellular metabolism is going to use up that insulin. And that's going to be different for each of your patients. So diet, right, and exercise are huge. And it's amazing. You'll think your patient is, you haven't checked much on him because he's doing fine. Well, come to find out, he's gotten up with his wife who came to visit. They walked all over the place. They've come back. And now the guy has a glucose of 60, you know, 55. You weren't even, what's this guy, you know? And it's mid-morning, and this is like really weird. Okay, so we have different kinds of insulins too, right? We've talked about how we use insulin, regular acting insulin that we give for formula. There are others, right? I could give you a little handout on other kinds of insulin. Okay. What are the other kinds of insulin for?
Well, there's the fast acting, the regular, the long period of time.
Yeah, like Lantus is a longer acting insulin, very common. When might we use Lantus?
That's for like a basal, that's when you're going to have it like 24 hours.
Yeah, or possibly sometimes just at night. Yeah, because it lasts a long time, so we often give it at night to last through the night. And sometimes we give it twice. Yeah, okay. And we always have it checked by another nurse, because you can imagine if we mixed up your insulins, and instead of giving, sometimes we give fairly high doses of Lantus, the long acting insulin, because it's going to go in gradually, right? But say you got it mixed up and you accidentally gave 20 units of a very quick-acting insulin. You're going to kill somebody pretty quick. So that's why we always check insulins with another nurse. Now, in skills, I understand you were taught to mix insulins, right? Mm-hmm. That generally isn't done in hospitals, so don't assume that you can do that when you're in the hospitals. It's something that we've readily done just until the last year or so. So it may still be okay in the hospital you're in or not, so be sure to ask. Don't assume it's okay. Current research, again, evidence-based practice, has shown that there are less mistakes done if we just draw it up twice. And actually, in practice, that's so much easier. You just to do it with another nurse, and you drop this, and you drop this, and then they have to watch, and it's so much better to just say, okay, I do this up from this bottle, and this up from this bottle. They go, yeah, yep, that's what the MAR says. You got it. Okay. And the bad news is your patient gets stuck twice, but the good news is it's a lot safer. So current research shows. So be aware of that. Don't automatically think if you're giving two cuts in someone that you can probably do that. You may be doing that at 9 o'clock. There may be at night or at 9 in the morning. There may be an order for Mantis as well as a fast acting. Okay? Yes?
Did you say that Mantis is given?
Is what?
Like Lantus, you said it's a 24-hour.
It's a longer. Like, is it 12 or 24? I have to look at your chart.
It's 24.
Is it 24? Okay, 24.
But who would you give that to?
So you give it like overnight to someone who is going to have high peaks in their sugars to maintain over a longer period of time. And it's not uncommon to have a baseline of Lantus and then you add the quicker acting to it as needed, and that's your base, and then you go on. Got it? So the whole idea is to balance the level of insulin and sugar in the blood. That's what I want you to think about, is that balance. That's what you're doing. Hypoglycemia is not enough sugar. We want to give sugar. Okay? Hyperglycemia is too much sugar. We want to give insulin. Okay? So think about, get that concept really clear. And think about it as you're practicing. Exactly how does it work? Why are we given this? And what kind of insulin are we given? So diabetes is a group of diseases, and the result of being a diabetic is you tend to get hyperglycemic. Two kinds, right? Two kinds of diabetes. It used to be called juvenile diabetes, but type 1 is a complete deficiency, you know that. Type 2 is insulin resistant. The muscles don't pick up the insulin that's circulating in the bloodstream. The pancreas is still giving out insulin, but the muscles aren't, at least at sometimes that is also deficient. But the main problem is the inability of the cells in the muscles to pick up the insulin. Okay. So in that case, we've got plenty of insulin circulating in the blood, but it's not being picked up by the cells. So we give more insulin and we drown the body, and then it tends to absorb more. Okay. Just by sheer numbers. So type 2 is insulin resistant. When do people become a type 2 diabetic? What other differences are there between these two types of diabetes, these two general types of diabetes?
Type
2
is common for people who are obese or overweight?
Yeah, type 2 is more common for people that are obese and overweight. And age range?
Older.
What's your thought? Older, yeah, what? Midlife? Body?
Older.
Type 2? Yeah. More sedentary lifestyle? Obese? Common. Type 1, in general, these are just general. You see differences all the time, but in general, type 1 is younger, right? Generally diagnosed as an adolescent or a child. Okay. Right. And one of our major goals in dealing with diabetic patients is education. Who was it, Naomi? Who was it that educated the Spanish-speaking newly diagnosed? Yeah, that was great, Gabby, right? Want to talk about that?
Well, I didn't really do much. Like, I had two diabetic patients, and the first one I showed her daughter how to check her mom's blood sugar and how to give insulin injections.
She's in a diagnosed.
Yeah, she was just diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. And then the other patient was also diagnosed with type 2 diabetes Thursday, and then went there Friday. And then his ex-wife died from diabetes, so he was like super scared of it.
Yeah.
And when I went there to go show him all the videos that the hospital supplies, but he had already watched them.
Yeah, the diabetes educator actually looked to Gabby to help out because this gentleman was Spanish speaking and thought that Gabby might be able to, with her language skills, might be able to be the better nurse in educating him, which I thought was very quite a compliment. But he already knew that.
He already saw everything, so.
But then tell us about the other thing that you, to your class, about the other thing that you noticed about this patient. It's one thing you said to me. You didn't look like you didn't present as your classic type 2 diabetic, did he?
Him?
Yeah. No, not at all.
No.
He was lean, he looked healthy.
Yeah. He was.
He was.
It was surprising. He was like.
It was surprising. So it's not always your, and he was younger.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he was like in his
40s?
45.
But he looked like a young, fit man. He didn't look like you're overweight, big couch potato at all. So don't let it fool you. How we metabolize sugars in our body isn't always representative in how we present. So, yeah, but that was pretty cool. So we're going to, of course, individualize our education on the type of diabetes, certainly. Why is the length of diagnosis important?
Because the longer you have it, the more complications.
Very good point. Also, the more you know, hopefully. You've heard this routine before, right? So you're going to approach someone that's had it for a while, not to say that they don't need more education. There's a lot of diabetics that are out there that truly aren't doing a good job of managing their diabetes, and these are the ones we often see in the hospital. They obviously have a knowledge deficit, and you never know. It may be you who can make the difference. And maybe you may be the one that finally gets through them. I remember having a gentleman that had been diagnosed with diabetes, I think about 5 years before he's in the hospital, hospitalized with some neuropathy. I think he was going to lose a toe, and he's like joking and carrying on with me, and he says, oh, well, this truck driver type of big guy, you know, oh, when we get out of here, we'll just have to have a dance at Joe's down the street, you know. And I'm like, this guy was completely uncontrolled with diabetes, no control. And he said, oh, I don't worry about that, you know, when God takes me, he's going to take me, and that's it. And I said, look, if you don't start controlling your diabetes, you're not going to be here in 2 years for me to dance with you at Joe's down the street. You know? So if you want to live, you have to get control of this. And he's like, really? And I'm like, yeah, not really. And this is a guy in the mid-50s, and it was true. Diabetes is one of the most debilitating diseases that exists in our for humans. It can be a slow, horrible death. Amputations? Have you seen any amputations from diabetes yet? Almost all the amputations we do, if it's not trauma, it's diabetes. Toes, legs, okay? What happens is the blood supply to the peripheral, in the peripheral arteries pretty much ceases, so they're very cold. Hands, feet are cold. They're not getting a good blood supply. These are people that are uncontrolled. I know of a 9-year-old type 1 diabetic. The man is just quite a perfectionist. Everything's been great. He's gotten good care. He's lived till he's into his 90s. You can, but it takes absolutely diligent care from the patient and their support staff. And availability to medicine and availability to healthcare, which is not what all our patients have on. So diabetes can be an absolutely horrible disease, but the flip side of it is it can be well controlled and not have these horrible, horrible outcomes, like the lost limbs that I've seen with diabetes. What happens is they have no feeling in their feet, right? No feeling in their fingertips. Peripheral neuropathy. There's no nerves there. There's no blood supply, and the nerves just don't work. Okay? So you have an injury on your foot. It gets infected. Gangrene sets in. Pretty soon, if it goes untreated, you're going to lose your foot. If it continues up your leg, you're going to lose your leg. It's either that or your life. Yeah.
Can you clarify, say again, what peripheral neuropathy is?
Peripheral neuropathy, yeah. The losing sensation in the extremities, in the nerves of the extremities. Hence, someone wouldn't feel a cut on their foot. And, or a bed sore or whatever. And they truly wouldn't feel it.
Yeah, the patient has lower extremity.
Peripheral neuropathy. Yeah, it's a huge secondary complication of diabetes, and that leads directly to some of these horrible outcomes like amputation. There's retinal neuropathy too, which people go blind. So diabetes just slowly, if it's uncontrolled, again, controlled diabetes is a whole different story, but if it's under-controlled, it can affect many, many organs of the body and slowly make them inoperable. And the patient slowly dies. And it's a long, drawn-out, poor quality of life. And we can make a big difference. Because diabetes is a chronic illness, it's very much managed by nurses. Like the sliding scales and all the insulins that the physicians give us, yeah, we're completely in charge of it, right? Completely. Again, with bowels and pain, we get diabetes too. And diabetes nurse educators are all nurses. It can have extreme complications, but the disease itself is not complicated. It's simply a balance between the sugars and the insulins in the body. That's it. So it was a perfect opportunity for nurses to manage this disease, and they do. When you get your RN, you can become a diabetic nurse and hang out your shingle and become a diabetic nurse educator completely independent. It's something very much handled by nurses. So length of time, prior knowledge, of course, and the patient's individual health and social economic circumstances. Why is social economic important?
Because we don't have knowledge deficit.
Why? Education?
They don't have, they're just in a bad situation. They can't get the health care they need necessarily, yeah. And the knowledge of it.
Exactly. Can't get the diagnosis, can't get the, very good, can't get the care, can't get the equipment, can't get, yes. Can't get the glucometers. Don't have the resources. And this is what you'll see often. You'll see people come in with fairly advanced cases of diabetes where they're feeling some of the symptoms of complications from diabetes and didn't even know they had it. Yeah?
How often would you say to go in to, like, check everything?
How often should anybody? Or?
Yeah.
And it really depends on your age.
Because
and your health status.
Because I know, like, our age group, like, we could be prone to it, but not necessarily be diagnosed with it.
Yes.
But we could get it, so, like, how would we...
When you went for a normal blood work that you probably have done every year or two, I think, like, even for me, they only do blood work every 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't show up then. Just in a random fasting glucose, which is part of the regular blood screening that's done every 2-3 years. That kind of thing. And luckily, as nurses and being employed by hospitals or large organizations, you're going to have access to healthcare your whole life. It'll be very nice. So you'll be able to have that. And diabetes is not something that comes on quick. It's a gradual thing. So you say, oh, sugar's a little up. You know, why don't you come back in next year and have it checked again? Okay.
Well, type 1 can.
I was just thinking, yeah, but when I said that, I shouldn't say that. Type 1, the symptomology can be quick. It's lurked there, but all of a sudden you can become pretty sick. But even so, it's not years, it's a few months. But it can be pretty quick. Do you have a story to tell?
Well, I've been diabetic for 10 years.
Wonderful. Tell us all about it.
Mine was all of a sudden. Because
you look great.
Yeah, I got really sick, and the whole polyuria, polydipsia, all that, and then headaches.
How long of a time frame was this? I was thinking...
It was like a week.
Seriously?
Yeah, it was like...
Wow.
I don't know if I had it before.
You must have, but that's when you really started to be symptomatic, really noticed. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, because I really...
I had like no energy. I was eating every 2 hours because obviously everything was going down the toilet. And finally, my mom took me...
How old were you?
9. Mm-hmm. Finally, my mom took me to the doctor and they checked my sugar was like 300. So that's when they taught me to give shots.
And how was that as a child?
I think it was kind of exciting for me just because I thought it was something like cool and different.
Well,
I remember going around telling everybody like, oh yeah, because I was doing like 6 shots a day, and then I went out to the insulin pen. Then I went out to 2 shots a day, and then I went out to the insulin pen and I had Lantus to cover me the 24 hours.
Plus,
and every time I ate, I would give Humalog.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm on the pump.
And how's that pump going?
It's good. I like it.
Can you explain about the pump to our
students?
How's that work?
My clinical group is to hear because I did this in clinical. Well, the pump is just like a little thing that I carry in my pocket.
Little, yeah.
It's cool.
It's like a cell phone almost.
It's like really small.
Isn't that cool?
And the insulin is inside of it. It's got like 200 units, which is enough to cover me like 2 to 3 days, depending on how much I eat.
Or exercise.
Yeah, also because exercise does bring my sugar down. So every time I eat, I count my carbs before I eat, and then I put in how many carbs I'm eating, and what my sugar level is, and then it calculates.
And then
it's been programmed.
Right.
So it calculates how much insulin I should give, and then
it gives it to
go.
Is that cool or what? That's very cool. And so you're feeling great. Have you had any problems since you were 9? Good.
I just had my eyes checked
and
I'm good, so.
Okay, and you should be good.
Yeah, every time we have this discussion, it like scares me because I don't know. Like,
I truly have, I know a man whose father's in his 90s and is doing great.
Yeah.
Nothing, no problem with type 1 diabetes. Just well controlled because this guy has got a pump, you know, and he was absolutely anal about it his whole life because he's like a really precise man.
Yeah.
And and they could afford the health care, and it's done very well. That didn't used to be the case, which is why it scares you.
And I wasn't very controlled when I started.
You weren't.
Because I was small.
Yeah.
Obviously, I wanted to be like any other kid. Now I can pretty much eat whatever I want, just because if I count the carbs, it'll give me all the insulin I need for.
Right.
But before, I was on a, you can only have 70 carbs per meal. And of course,
yeah.
I went over, you know.
Of course
I
you did.
Yeah, so.
And how did you get diabetes? What's your thought?
How?
Yeah.
They said it was, I don't know.
Any diabetes in your family?
Not type 1. There's a lot of type 2s, but not. Mm-hmm.
There's some interesting research being done. Some thoughts it could be a virus, could be a genetic predisposition, could be familial.
And the fact that we don't know how long I had it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you just were symptomatic that long, but you really don't. Mm-hmm. Who knows? It could have been more with it. Could have been genetic.
But then would I have been alive?
I don't know.
With it?
Could you have handled it? But maybe it took you that long for it to get that bad notice. I mean, because it's progressive, so who knows? Your body grew that much that you were no longer able to handle it. I mean, there's all sorts of theories on it. Yes.
Could the fact that her family had a history of type 2 diabetes make her more prone to have type 1, or is it more?
I believe that the research would say yes, that she would be prone to it, but I don't think there's any direct ties because there's no direct link genetically that we know of. So it's interesting. And it's very hard to tease out the type 2s, what's genetic and what's familial. Like Hispanic people, American Indians, Alaska Natives, and Latinos tend to have more type 2. Now, is that genetic? Or is that because of the diet?
It's not diet. I have type 1 in my family. Actually, never mind, I take back. I don't know, but I have
Do you have diabetes too?
Huh?
Do you have diabetes?
No, I don't.
No.
I don't know anyone who has
diabetes. There's a lot of type 2s in every ethnic group. Yeah, absolutely. But possibly the higher fat intake, right? That's my guess. Or maybe it is genetic. I don't know. We don't know. And these are all questions that research will answer, I'm sure. So honestly, the prevalence incidence, it's all around us. Yeah. That's gestational diabetes. Anybody have any experience with that?
My mom was diagnosed when she had so
she's prone.
No, she already has it.
All right.
Yeah.
No, I mean, did she continue having diabetes after she had you?
Yeah.
She did.
Type 2.
It would be type 2, yes. Mm-hmm. The common sequela is that a woman will be diagnosed with gestational diabetes and then prone to type 2, not necessarily acquiring it at that point. She may have acquired it, you know, when you were 10, so you didn't know. Yeah, more likely. Depending how young she was when she had you.
She was early 30s?
Oh, then she may have had diagnosed then. Yeah, that could very well have been. And found out because she was pregnant. Because, of course, the pregnancy puts so much stress on one's body, which those of you who will have the privilege of becoming pregnant will know it's really, really just physically horrible. and one of the problems is, of course, the ability to balance. And that's, what did they say about that for you? Did they say that today pregnancy is not a big deal?
If I get pregnant, it's just going to be like high risk.
Yeah, it's just a high risk pregnancy.
Yeah, they told me like you have to prepare the time because your A1C has to be down like below 6.5.
We're going to get to what an A1C is. Can you, since you mentioned it, can you tell us what it is?
All I know is that it's the I don't know what A1C stands for. I know it's the average of like 3 months, what your blood sugar was. I'm not sure how they calculate it, but it's on a scale of like, I know if you're normal, should it be 5 or 6?
Yeah, it's 5.
And for a diabetic, well, we're supposed to try to get it under that, but I'm at a 7 right now. Which is way better because when I started, I was like at an 11. Which means that your average of your sugars was like 300, 400.
This is long term, 3 months. So you have a patient that says, oh yeah, I'm doing real well. And sure enough, yeah, their blood sugar is very controlled from what you can see. You do an A1C, and yeah, they're really controlled well, you know, over the last 2 weeks before they came to see you. You know, and they've been not otherwise. The other question you're going to get is why do we give insulin in the hospital by injection when maybe someone is perfectly controlled with just oral tablets? Why would we then all of a sudden they're taking insulin injection? People get kind of freaked out. What do you mean? I'm diabetic, but I just take my metformin or whatever. Why all of a sudden are we giving them injections? Any ideas? A couple things. The meds they're taking, the extreme change in lifestyle. Right now they're lying in bed, they're not exercising at all. And we have the ability to watch their diabetes very closely in the hospital, don't we? And we're there, we're nurses, we got it, we're right there. Okay, you can get it. Widespread, sixth leading cause of death. Okay? So yes, diabetes is a horrible chronic disease. The majority have type 2. Only 10% have type 1. And now we're seeing type 2 in what new population? We've been talking about middle-aged people. Young, yes, children, couch potato children with high carbohydrate intake. And again, we talked a little bit about some of the, I don't know if it's ethnic or familial, or it's genetic, whatever, but it does tend to be in these groups. What's the other thought, possibly? We talked about food, maybe, and a high fat content diet. What might be the other things that would make it? Diabetes more prevalent among American Indian, Alaska Natives, and Latinos. Would be the other thing you could think of that we have discussed before.
Maybe, like, not necessarily the culture, but I don't think we're all completely on track with, like, we're not all educated upon all that stuff. So we just eat tons of, I don't know, in my family we have, like, huge, reunions, and everyone just, pigs out.
Food is a huge part of the culture, right?
So I don't know if it's culture-wise or...
Yeah, see, I don't know if it is either, but there's certainly a lack of education.
Yeah.
Often it's a social economic thing, too. And that could be somewhat education, right? More, like you, for instance, are not going to carry that forward because you have more education, correct? Yeah, so it could be access to education, access to healthcare. Right? Yeah. So I don't, again, we don't know if it's familial, if it's genetic, why these populations tend to have, if it's how they metabolize sugars, it very well maybe. We don't know. But there's a large increase in type 2 diabetes and obesity in the U.S. and actually in other civilized parts of the world. And why would that be? What do you guys do?
Text.
Constantly. Yeah, you sit around and text. Do you even walk next door to talk to your roommate? Or your floor mate? No. What do? Are you going to get up off your bed, walk next door to say hi to the girl in the next room? Or the guy in the next room, are you? No, you're going to text him, right? My son will text me from his bedroom.
Yeah.
I can yell better than texting. Because we're right there. And I text him. What's your breakfast? And then I have to get up and find my phone, and I was charging over there, and oh god, this would be important, I get all freaked out, and then I finally get there, it's him. And he's behind his door, and I go, so, you kind of are developing a sedentary generation here. So be careful, watch for it, If you're going to have that's fine, but then get up and run around the park or something. And we're not the only ones, we're just in the U.S. We talked about complications, myocardial infarction, stroke, okay? If it's poorly controlled, all right? If diabetes is poorly controlled. If it's well controlled, diabetics in general, well controlled, good care can live an absolute normal lifespan. $132 billion a year in diabetes-related health. Huge. Okay, so if we can teach people to maintain their diabetes, great. Okay, here are the signs. There you go. Polyuria, polydipsia, signs and symptoms. A thought is autoimmune, type 1, destruction of the pancreatic inlet cells, so that there is simply is not insulin produced, as I said. Generally, children and adolescents may be some genetic predisposition. We're following other ideas such as viral. We basically have no idea. why you have it. 5 to 10% of all patients with diabetes. Rapid onset risk factors, and rapid meaning 5 months or 2 weeks or whatever we want to take. Certainly a lot faster than the years it takes to get to type 2 diabetes. Type 2, insulin resistance. The muscles don't pick up the insulin. Okay? Any age, but we generally see it in middle age, as we pointed out. Heredity plays an important role. So yeah, you can develop the propensity for it. But again, if you tend to be carry a few extra pounds, and your mother did, and her mother, or his father, or da 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 da, right? Is that hereditary? Is that familial? Is it cultural? Is it because of your body makeup? Who knows? Right. More gradual onset. Okay, we talked about endothelia inflammation, thickening, chronic complication, neuropathy. Here's our screenings. We do a casual plasma glucose. All right, that's if you walk in the doctor and they just take some blood and they test it. Fasting, which is more of like just general blood work people have done every couple of years, say I have a fasting blood work, and that would be, glucose would be included in that. There's an oral glucose tolerance test. That's a little more involved. If they suspect you have particularly gestational diabetes, they do an oral tolerance test, which is very interesting. We eat these heavy sugar-filled meals, and they test how fast you can assimilate the sugars. It's very interesting. That will give, obviously, an idea of how much insulin exists in your body, right? How fast can you metabolize the sugars? And screening, again, fasting, talked about that. The A1C, which we discussed, which is really good. We also test urine, glucose, and ketone levels. Okay? Urine tests, serum cholesterol, serum electrolytes, all play into how someone's going to do with his disease. Type 1s, you always need insulin by injection. Okay, we're always going to inject it. Type 2 may take oral or insulin or injections, depending on how severe it is, depending on the circumstances. So someone, as I said, who comes in the hospital thinks they are well controlled, we still maybe be injecting them while they're in the hospital. Not unusual. And here's our types. Rapid, short, intermediate, long-acting, give a hand up on that. So when you write down your insulin, please write what kind it is that you're going to be giving. Please know the difference. Right? Learn that. You definitely need it in the hospital. Because you can imagine when you give a long-acting at a fairly high dose, when you should be giving rapid-acting, can have deadly consequences. So you're going to be real aware of what it is that you're giving. A lot of teaching, like Gabby got a little taste of. We teach them to measure their blood glucose, about syringes, injections, insulin storage. Now that's a kind of an interesting thought. How is insulin stored in hospitals? You've been giving insulin, right? Mm-hmm. So where is it?
In a refrigerator.
It's in a refrigerator. And in a common, everybody takes the same as this bottle?
It's in the same bottle.
Okay, so it's a common bottle that is in the fridge. Mm-hmm. Just in a tray with a little other insulins. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's one way. And anybody seen it stored any other ways? Yeah, have you seen it?
It's just in a little pull down on the wall, so there's no refrigeration.
In the med room? And
no, it was in the patient's room.
In the patient's room. Mm-hmm. And now, was that a common insulin, or?
No.
No, that was what?
It was individual. It was in the patient's room.
With his name on it and date and the whole thing, yes. Not refrigerated. So here we have two exactly opposite examples, right? Here's one that's refrigerated, common insulin, everybody taking the same Lantus bottle, metabolic bottle, versus an insulin bottle, patient-specific, non-refrigerated, in his room. You're going to see everything. That was perfect examples, thank you. You're going to see everything. Used to be that we always refrigerated insulin, not so much now, particularly at Marin General, where we put it in the patient's room, because they're only going to be there at the most a couple weeks. The insulin's not going to go bad, and we're going to toss it. But then again, that's awfully wasteful, isn't it? How many bottles do we toss a day in general? A lot. Versus how they do it at Santa Rosa, where it's in the fridge, in a common use. But then again, could you mix it up more easily that way? Probably, right. So these are the kind of decisions that the hospital system is making. Would we rather throw away the insulin, not worry about it, have a patient-specific, and waste all that insulin because it's probably a little safer for the patient, Or do we think our nurses are good, they can look at everything, we're not going to have those problems, and we feel confident keeping it in the fridge. Okay? So look where your hospital keeps it. You may find it anywhere. It's kind of funny. Mixing insulins. I talked about that already, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. We were taught to do it in skills, we didn't do it so much. Talked about storage. Food intake. Remember what food does with insulin, so you've got to watch the food intake. So let's say your patient has had a nice lunch, their friend comes over and brings these really cool fruit drinks from, you know, Java Juice down the street. They eat the Java Juice. What's going to happen? What would you expect their blood sugar then to do for their afternoon blood sugar stick? They had this unexpected Java Juice in the middle of the afternoon. If you're worried, you might even test it a half hour after they have the Java Juice. If they're really a brittle diabetic, which is where people that just spike and go crazy and have to keep them very well controlled. So what's the highest glucose you guys have seen in the hospital? Or how about?
380.
Okay. That's pretty high. 157. Yours is bad after you eat a big piece of cake.
I didn't have to.
What else? What have you seen? What have you heard about? What about the emergency room? Heard anybody coming in to the emergency room with high insulins? What's yours usually? How high is it been?
I've been up above what the meter can read for. Like, it'll just say high, and that means it's above 600. A couple times, one time,
when the machine stops reading.
The thing hadn't, nothing has ever happened to me though before. I just get, obviously, like, I feel really sick, I feel thrown up, but I've never gone into. And then every time I check my ketones, they're fine, so it hasn't gone into my urine. Yeah. But one time it was my pump. I thought I put it on, but the little cannula that goes inside actually bent right before it went into my skin.
Yeah,
so I ate and I put on insulin, and then I checked, and then I started feeling really sick. I checked my sugar, and it was like up at like 500. So I put on more insulin. And then I was still feeling really sick, so I can check my sugar now, it was above, because it just said high, so it was above 600.
Yeah, we didn't even go up.
And that's when I like touched around and I noticed it was kind of wet, and I was like, oh.
Good. It's going externally, it's doing a heck of a lot of it. Yeah. Good, exactly. I've heard of insulin of like 1,000, at least 1,000 in the ER. So what happens when that happens? Where's my thing? Okay, so we're going to educate them to take it, and educate hypo and hyper. Hypo is cold and clammy, needs some candy. Hyper is what? What's hype? You have too much sugar? What do you feel like? Let's hear it from the expert.
Well,
sick, right? Yeah, yucky.
Yeah, really thirsty, urinating a lot, like throwing up, my head.
Nauseous, and
my mouth is really, really dry.
Weak, and it's yucky.
Yeah.
Generalized, bleh. Is that, but it can get worse, so we'll talk about that. Okay, a lot of education, obviously, and teaching people to check for signs and symptoms of hypo and hyper. Obviously, you knew that you were getting sick, and you could just check and see what's going on. Same with people with hypo. First thing I ask them is, are you feeling all right? And it's amazing how people with 55 blood sugars can feel fine. You go, are you sure? You know? Because you never trust the machine. You always take it two or three times before you treat, right? And yeah, you're really okay. You've gotten 55, 54, 57, and they're like, yeah, I'm feeling fine. You're looking at them. And, okay, so it's amazing what our bodies can tolerate. Like you.
Yeah. I start feeling it like that.
You do, yeah. That's good. And not everybody does. They can get down lower and they even feel it, which is bad. It's good. So you teach people to be very conscious of their bodies and tell them what they will be feeling. Carbohydrates. So your patient says, I don't need any sugar. You know, I don't have a problem. And then you think, well, how many carbs do we eat? Well, what do you eat? Well, I eat a lot of pasta. It's really good for you, those complex carbohydrates. Except they turn into sugar too, don't they? Pretty fast. Yeah. So you need to educate them on eating high protein, eating a lot of veggies, that kind of thing, and minimize the carbohydrates. But as you pointed out, you can help them and eat anything you want, right? Pretty much. Like there was an 18-year-old newly diagnosed diabetic at New General last year. He was all into pizza. he had a whole, he would equate everything to a piece of pizza. You know, and that was fine, it worked. You know, he could have so many pieces of pizza, but then he had this and this. So his insulin intake was completely based on pizza.
The only thing wrong with that is that sometimes, like, especially because pizza has so much fat, I've noticed it with pizza and Chinese food, my sugar will go down fine, and then overnight, it, like, goes up.
Yeah,
I wake up with, like, a high. So I've got
to
give, like, a combo bolus, which will be, like, 2 hours later, it'll give me a little bit extra.
Oh, okay. So what do you give? You give Lantus and then something, then it?
No, well, it's on my pump now, so I'm not too long.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So you just gave yourself another...
Just do the combo.
Just like a couple of minutes of Kimberly, like a couple hours later.
Mm-hmm, a couple hours.
See, she's so good. Mm-hmm. You're like the ideal patient. That's beautiful. Alcohol. Big deal, right? Because what does alcohol do?
Well, alcohol is down to
the question. It's a sugar.
I don't know.
Usually, alcohol gen...
And I talked to my nursing educator,
yeah.
And... She said that it does make sense that after a couple hours it would go down.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it's sugar, so it's going to go up.
I don't know.
The alcohol is, you have to take alcohol into consideration.
Sweet. Yeah, I don't drink alcohol.
Well, it's probably why. sweeteners. Sweeteners. Lot of sugar-free stuff out there, right? Yeah. I think I would have a hard time. I'd use up all my insulin with chocolate. Okay, so we're going to deal with meal planning. And what about diet plan for older adults? Yeah, they take a little more care. What about when you're sick and don't want to eat? That's a huge deal. So then you have to go to a completely different regime. So diabetics need to know what do they do if they lessen their food intake. Or if they stress out and are exercising a lot. Or they're experiencing a lot of stress. Any kind of physical condition is going to impact your insulin and sugar use in your body. So you have to be aware. So that's another thing that nurses commonly help people work through. Okay, you're nauseous, how are we going to deal with this? Exercise is very important because if you exercise, you burn sugars. Therefore, you don't need as much insulin, right? Very important. And if you're sick and you're not exercising, that's going to throw it all off. So these are all things that people need to be educated about. Exercise. So obviously, type of diabetes, the intensity of exercise, the duration, time of day, when you hydrate, next insulin, that all is important. Okay, more side effects. Diabetic ketoacidosis develops when there's an absolute deficiency of circulating insulin. And you at, when it was over 600, you still had no ketones. No ketoacidosis.
Yeah, there's no.
And this again is going to depend on one's body. You're young, you know, that's good.
I did have ketones before though. When I first started one time, they were all the way up in the purple.
The purple orange?
Yeah.
And how, do you know how high the blood sugar was?
Yeah, it was really high that day.
Okay. Manifestation of ketoacidosis. If this goes too far, you actually get into a diabetic coma. Okay, people can die. And this is what we see in the emergency rooms. Okay. Diabetics who are completely uncontrolled. Or undiagnosed. Let's see. More about ketoacidosis. A deficiency in circulating glucose available for brain function. All right, any more comments on diabetes?
What is the hyperosmolar hyperglycemia? Is that similar to the ketoacidosis thing?
Yes, it's part of the ketoacidosis thing. It's a symptom. It has to do with the molality, the concentrations of insulin and sugars and how they work in the cells. Not something I really intend to do. Any more concerns, questions? Are y'all ready to work with your diabetic patients? Comfortable with that? I think I need to go over and get those exams up because the afternoon class, the morning class is really anxious, so. I do.
all